Our next case is United States v. Jacinto. Lieutenant Newman, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant? And Lieutenant Nguyen, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Very well, then, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, judges of the court. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Jesse Newman, and I represent the appellant, Salvador Jacinto. Respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The lower court erred by ruling there was no prejudice when the defense was given only 3 business days to address a question that no court has answered in 7 years. That question is whether the complaining witness was suffering from psychotic agitation when she made her allegations. That question could have been answered by asking one person one question. Dr. Golf, why did you prescribe a powerful antipsychotic to a child? This court ordered the CCA to develop that question, specifically stating the lower court shall obtain the missing record evidence and any other evidence, such as affidavits from medical providers, relevant to whether he was diagnosed with psychotic agitation. In regards to the question of prejudice, this court went on to say, once the record is fully developed on the psychotic agitation issue, then they should address prejudice.
So, Lieutenant Newman, I think you'd agree there's lots of moving parts in this case, so I'd kind of like to break it down into its component parts. First thing I'd like to do is separate process from substance. Now, this goes to the point that you're just raising. Let's say in a hypothetical case, this court were to remand the case and say to the lower court, we want you to do A, B, C, and D because we want to determine X. Lower court does A, B, and C, not D, but still says X. Do you agree that in that instance, this court could still affirm that decision?
No, Your Honor, because...
So it's a process foul that prohibits us from affirming, in your view.
My understanding is the ultimate decision that the lower court, the ultimate finding that the lower court arrived at regarding prejudice was predicate on them finding these other issues that were ordered for factual development. They didn't do that. So they were both not in compliance as well as preemptive in general.
Well, that's why I'm separating it, though, into component parts and dealing with the hypothetical. I'm asking you if there's a process foul. Not a situation where a CCA has expanded beyond the mandate that had been provided by the court, but instead did not take that step of D, but still reached the issue and made the factual findings that go to the heart of the case, X. Isn't it true that this court still has the ability? I think the way it's phrased is ultimately decides whether to the remand has complied with.
It is ultimately to this court whether the remand was complied with.
So we're not dealing with process foul, we're dealing with a substance issue.
Correct.
So let's look at the substance issue. We've got a situation where we have findings of fact before us that say that no Thorazine was administered, that there were no problems with memory and perception, and that there is nothing to indicate that there was fabrication. Now, assuming for a moment that those findings were not clearly erroneous, and I'll give you an opportunity to argue that they were, why didn't those findings fully or at least adequately address what this court remanded this case for the first time around?
They did not fully address because they answered a secondary and, at best, ancillary question. They focused on whether or not the complaining witness was administered Thorazine subsequent to her initial prescription. This court ordered to develop the psychotic agitation issue. The question of whether she was later administered Thorazine certainly goes to perhaps the severity of her psychotic agitation or the representation of her symptoms. It does not answer the question, what symptoms were present initially upon her admission to the hospital that made Dr. Golf prescribe a powerful antipsychotic.
Now, was that really the question, or was the question a little broader? And that was, is there anything there in the record that indicates that this victim with this outcry had problems with memory or perception based either on the mental health of the victim or the medication that it had been administered? That's slightly different than what you've just articulated.
It's a matter of framing, Your Honor. I think I would still hold that the prescription of the Thorazine, and I'm not suggesting that the Thorazine was the cause of any mental memory issues or anything of that nature. The prescription of the Thorazine is the evidence that there were issues of psychotic agitation.
So, but we have a finding of fact that, in fact, there were no problems with perception or memory.
Yes, and as we raised in our brief, we hold that to be clearly erroneous.
And that's, so let's say that that is not clearly erroneous. I'm going to segue into your point that it was in just a moment. If that finding is not clearly erroneous, why isn't that sufficient to address the point that we had when we first remanded the case?
If it were not clearly erroneous, it would be sufficient.
Okay.
However it is.
Now, can you address why that factual finding is clearly erroneous?
Yes. So for the two reasons that I stated, it one, the administration of the prescription is ancillary at best to the issue. It does not address why it was prescribed in the first place, specifically what Dr. Golf saw in the complaining witness that necessitated prescription of a powerful antipsychotic. And two, as we addressed in pages 21 to 23 of her brief, those holdings were demonstrably false. And I don't want to get into them because they do deal with sealed material, but I will reiterate that we have shown that the particular findings that you quoted, Your Honor, were observably incorrect.
Counsel, may I ask a question? You started out by saying that the answer could have been obtained by asking Dr. Golf the question. Let's suppose that we agree that we haven't gotten what we wanted and we're issuing a new remand order. Could the remand order simply be to say, ask Dr. Golf, did he observe psychotic agitation, or, and if so, to elaborate on it? Would that be sufficient? I mean, if we were going to send this back again, we'd have to be very clear what we want, and you say that it's just Dr. Golf, or are you saying it's just Dr. Golf?
From the record, it appears, yes, it is just Dr. Golf that could answer this question.
And then he might have three different answers. He might say, yes, I observed this, or no, I didn't observe it, or he might say, I can't answer the question, maybe because he doesn't remember, or anything would be privileged, or whatever else it is. If he says yes, I assume you would say, well, then that shows that we should have been granted a continuance, so we could have followed that up. If he says no, or I can't answer the question, does that mean that, you know, you just really can't show any prejudice?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I think that answering that requires a heavy amount of speculation as to what trial defense counsel would have done differently from that information. Purely having that information in their, you know, quiver of arrows certainly would have allowed them to prepare for the actual factual landscape much better. Instead of giving them only 3 days to address, investigate, and present information that they had only just learned about.
Is there any reason to believe that Dr. Golf is going to know anything that is not in the records that have already been produced?
Certainly, Your Honor. It is somewhat unbelievable that a doctor would prescribe, again, a powerful antipsychotic to a child without a specific reason. There is no specific reason annotated in the record, and that's precisely the issue that resulted in the previous remand and wasn't addressed in the full review of the record.
Well, what I'm wondering, though, is Dr. Golf might say that was 7 years ago. If it's not in the record, I have no idea.
And that goes to why, although remand is in the power in one of the options before this Court, we have asked for dismissal with prejudice, setting aside dismissal with prejudice because of the potential that at this point we're talking about a remand order that was 3.5 years ago from an allegation that was 7 years ago. By the time a subsequent remand comes up to this Court, we're talking about over 10 years from the original trial, over 11 years from the allegation and the treatment of the complaining witness.
Counsel, you touched on it, but I want to clarify, because it's argued in your briefs, that the prejudice, your argument is that the prejudice is grounded in the counsel's inability to potentially either address a different theory of liability or obtain subject matter experts to address child psychosis or whatever, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I raise those as potential additional prejudice, but ultimately, yes, the prejudice is from the failure to prepare involving this late information. And to that point of Dr. Golf, it is worth noting that Dr. Golf was specifically requested by the defense, both in an initial request for production, then a motion to production, and then again orally at the debate hearing. And despite this, was ultimately denied this production.
So what about the government's point in that regard, where essentially the debate military judge says, well, hold your horses when it comes to the doctor here. The records may fully address this point. And then essentially says, you can, defense counsel, revisit this issue. And then the defense counsel never raises it again. Why isn't that an issue of forfeiture or waiver?
Two reasons, Your Honor. One, the defense raised it three times. How many times they need to raise it is certainly a question, but I don't think asking them to raise it more than three times is necessary. And the other issue being that ultimately the question before the court, being before the court, was unanswered. So regardless of whether or not the defense didn't ask for Dr. Golf a fourth or fifth time, that question still was required to be answered by the lower court and wasn't.
So the fact that the military judge said, let's first see what the medical records say. That can be dispositive. Then if you have an issue, you raise it again. Your point is that did not reset the clock.
Correct. And to the issue of the psychotic agitation, one of the elements that kind of shows the evidence that this order wasn't complied with is actually the lower court's opinion. They only mention psychotic agitation once as a recitation of the factual conflict this court specifically cited as the basis for their remand. They focused again instead on whether or not medication was administered, and as I've discussed, that's an ancillary issue at best. It may go to severity of those symptoms, but it does not address the initial symptoms themselves. Now, moving to the second issue of whether or not there's prejudice, we've touched on a little bit, but I would like to point out that because this factual development was not done, the full extent of the prejudice is still unquantifiable and indeterminate, because the critical issue, as this court identified, was never addressed. But we can still find that there is prejudice because there was a denial of a meaningful opportunity to prepare a complete defense. These are enumerated in the various RCMs. 701E says each party shall have adequate opportunity to prepare its case. 906B1, the discussion says reasons for continuance may include insufficient opportunity to prepare for trial. And to the point, 3 business days was not an adequate opportunity for defense to prepare for this bombshell last-minute evidence. And largely it is speculative what the defense would have done differently and specifically how that would have played out before the members, but they could have developed the issue further for further discovery as well as admission of the both prescription and diagnosis, which wasn't allowed, so that never went before the members. They could have investigated further, realized that the person they needed to talk to was Dr. Golf, and requested that Dr. Golf be there at the trial itself while his memory was still fresh. And they could have requested, as we discussed briefly, an additional expert, one that has a medical degree, one that has experience with pharmacology, one that has specific experience with child psychosis. In light of the intervening time and the lower court's failure to develop these issues, as ordered, appellant respectfully requests this court set aside and dismiss with prejudice the affected charges. And barring any questions, I respectfully request to reserve the remainder of my time.
Counsel, in that request, are you saying that that's the only remedy? I mean, you're not objecting to if we were to say send it back again and ask Dr. Golf the question.
I'm not objecting, but I would say it's not the preferred remedy because of the issues we identified, that there may be a lack of memory. It has been 7 years. It'll be 10 years before it comes back.
Counsel, can we be a little more specific? Say you were going to win on the first issue, like, but the fail to comply is sort of a vague, right, standard. So, like, can you be more specific about what would you want us to hold? Like, in what way did the CCA? Because maybe it's our remand is the problem, that we weren't specific enough. But we told them to go collect relevant evidence, and I think they would argue, the government will argue that, like, well, the Dubé hearing judge thought he had collected all the relevant evidence. I think he would have argued that Dr. Golf's testimony might have been duplicative or cumulative with the other evidence. So, like, how specifically would you want this court to say the process, the remand Dubé process, erred because how? More sort of precise, rather than just sort of generally not complying with the remand, how did they err?
They erred by not asking Dr. Golf specifically why a powerful antipsychotic was prescribed to a child in this circumstance, because that's what the record is silent on. It's absolutely absent.
And if the government gets up and argues, well, that would have been cumulative or duplicative of the other evidence already before the Dubé hearing, is that an abuse of discretion? Is that an evidentiary ruling that the Dubé hearing made that we look at with an abuse of discretion standard, or how do we decide, how do we review whether or not the Dubé hearing judge erred in not requiring Dr. Golf to testify?
If I may answer.
Please proceed.
It's a difficult question because of sort of the layers in this, because the initial question of whether or not the lower court complied with the remand is a de novo review. And the abuse of discretion is obviously a separate standard of review. I don't know that I have a specific answer for you, but I would reiterate that the record is clear that it is not duplicative, because if it were duplicative, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have this question of whether or not it was answered. We would have a simple one-sentence, maybe two-sentence answer from Dr. Golf: I prescribed Thorazine because X. And we don't have that.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Lieutenant Nguyen. Lieutenant Nguyen.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court. May it please the court, I'm Lieutenant Lun Nguyen, and along with Mr. Brian Keller, representing the United States. This court should affirm this case for two reasons. First, the lower court complied with the remand order because the entire 212 pages of the medical record acquired by the Dubé judge shows that the military judge, his findings of fact were not clearly erroneous. And on the second point, plus not prejudiced, because the record supports that Thorazine was never filled, never administered, the victim did not actually suffer from psychotic agitation symptoms, nor had any issues with her memory, perception, or credibility. So on the first point,
Lieutenant Nguyen, why should this court countenance what happened below? It's a situation where the defense specifically requested to get an affidavit at a minimum from Dr. Golf, or as you put it. That may not have been dispositive, because as Judge Maggs addressed, it could have been that after all this time has expired, he may say, I don't recall, or not able to do it for other reasons such as privilege. But it was such an obvious step, and it was so obviously authorized by this court in our first remand. And it goes to the point of how long this is dragged out. It's dragged out from the time that the offense occurred to the first go-round, to the remands, and so forth. There are two issues here. Number one, why should we not say, get us the affidavit in this particular case? And why should we not say, this is a message. When these cases hang around and we have to go through remands, and when we have authorized a broad-based approach to be taken below, obvious steps to answer the question must be taken by the lower court or by the DeBay military judge.
Yes, Your Honor. So I'll present 2 points, first generally about the remand order, and then more in detail about Dr. Goff.
On the first Lieutenant Nguyen, I don't – before you get into argument, I'm getting an echo, so if you could slow down a little bit.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. My apologies.
No, that's okay. It's the sound system.
On the first point, this court ordered a fact-finding in order to, and I quote from the opinion, to make an informed decision about whether or not the military judge's crucial factual findings are clearly erroneous. The 212 pages of medical record, which covers more than just what the military judge ordered for the 2 weeks at trial, it spans not just from May 3rd, 2017, when the victim was admitted into patient care, but also up until the final day of trial in 2018, June 25th. And those records, without going into the sealed material, resolves these essential issues.
But the essential issue is, why was the victim prescribed Thorazine for psychiatric agitation? That's the central issue. And the record just doesn't answer that. It said, well, she wasn't given it later on, but the central issue was, why was she prescribed it for psychotic agitation?
It's true, Your Honor. The medical records did not answer directly why she was addressed, why she was prescribed the Thorazine, but it does answer the predicate question that the appellant raised in his reply. The predicate question is, did she suffer from psychotic agitation symptoms at all? And the medical records, if you look at every report, which, not going too far into the sealed material, mm-hmm. but it covers observations by every provider that interacted with the patient on her levels of hallucination, mood, behavior, memory. It goes in detail, and there is just zero evidence that she ever suffered psychotic agitation symptoms.
And but that's during the hospitalization. I mean, the whole point in what both Judge Maggs and Chief Judge are trying to get at, the answer of what was her mental state at the time the allegations were made, that is not answered because we don't know what the admitting physician observed. I mean, that's what's at the root of all of this.
Yes, Your Honor, but the United States agrees with Chief Judge Olson's point. When it comes to compliance with the remand, the lower court can answer A, B, and C, but not D, but it answers Z or X. That is the clear error standard. And according to this court in Grainer, the record does not need to be perfect. It just needs to be sufficient to answer the essential questions. And the question here is whether or not the factual findings by the military judge was clearly erroneous, and if the court believes that it can make that determination, then we proceed to the next issue. Was there prejudice? And here the United States believes that there is no prejudice. But before we move on to that second issue, I want to talk more about Dr. Goff, just to finish Chief Judge's question. The military judge relied on the appellant's own claim that Dr. Goff was only relevant in that he would present pretty much cumulative testimony about what would already be in the medical records. That was the appellant's own claim. Furthermore, Dr. Goff was already disclosed to the appellant on June 4th of 2017, a whole week before the June 14th 39A session. They had all this time to determine whether or not he actually has relevant testimony and relevant knowledge to, one, whether or not he was one that prescribed Thorazine and why she was prescribed Thorazine. But if we were to look in the records, the appellant's motion at most speculate that he could have been the one to prescribe Thorazine. And at the debate hearing, on the record, the defense counsel said that he would only be an alternative remedy to talk about the medical records. He wouldn't present anything more, and the military judge, sorry, the debate judge relied on that. And that's invited error. So in addition to Chief Judge's point that this was waiver, there's also invited error. Appellant causes, he can't take advantage of the very error he created. Of course, just to summarize the first issue, because there's enough in the 212 pages of medical record to determine whether or not it's clear error, the lower court complied, and we can move on to the prejudice analysis.
Counsel, before you move on, can I ask one more question? The Dubay military judge didn't have, because of when the Dubay hearing was, didn't have the benefit of this court's opinion in Millett. And so we can't fault the military judge. But the CCA did when they reviewed what the military judge did, and they didn't seem overly concerned that the military judge might have applied a different understanding of 513 than Millett prescribes. But the CCA didn't seem particularly concerned about that. So should we be concerned about that? Why shouldn't we be concerned about that?
No, and of course, the motion in limine and the military judge's ruling is sealed, but just briefly, the military judge's finding is very much in line with Millett in 2022. The military judge pretty much said that for 513 purposes, the Thorazine prescription, Dr. Goff, and any diagnoses were not covered. It would not be privileged under 513. The issue is the motion to eliminate that the appellant filed to cross the witnesses on the Thorazine prescription. They failed on 403 analysis, but they never appealed it. So I can't. So we didn't brief on that issue, unfortunately. Does that answer your question, Your Honor? So moving on to prejudice, the appellant is not prejudiced because just like the court correctly cited Wellington, the appellant fails to demonstrate prejudice. Just like in Wellington, he fails to show what he would have done differently had the Thorazine prescription been disclosed earlier or if the continuance was actually granted and how that would influence the findings. And then just to bring up some points that were brought up earlier by my counsel. The appellant at best speculates that there were symptoms before the prescription of Thorazine. If we look to the record, opined that that there were reasons for that there must have been a reason for the prescription itself, but she was never asked directly based on the victim's particular circumstances, the circumstances that brought her to emergency care, if that would have been the reason. And again, I don't want to go into the sealed material, but nothing in the records conclusively says that it must have been because of psychotic agitation symptoms. And therefore, we have to rely on the military judge's findings. It's very clear, looking up, going to the findings, as well as in-camera view of the records, there's no evidence that she ever suffered from psychotic agitation symptoms. And for these reasons, the United States respectfully requests that the court affirm. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Lieutenant Nguyen. Lieutenant Newman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just two brief points. I want to reiterate that the entirety of this proceeding could have been avoided if one person had been asked one question. Why did you prescribe a child a powerful antipsychotic? And to that question of whether the appellant invited this error, I would cite Joint Appendix 498, which is the original request at the Dubay hearing, in which the defense cites as one of their reasons for asking for Dr. Goff that he's the only person that can talk about, quote, the purpose for prescribing various medications. For this is not a new theory, as the government has kind of suggested. This was the initial reason why they wanted Dr. Goff there. Also, it's not speculation that there were symptoms unless we're talking about malpractice of Dr. Golf. And as we've talked about in other things, there's no evidence of that in the record. So we have to presume that there was evidence of symptoms that necessitated prescription of a controlled substance. Barring any questions.
Seeing no questions, thank you, Lieutenant Newman. The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until further order of the court.
The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.